Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts with a focus on Kenpo. I am Reggie Darden, and today I have another great guest here, commonly known as Sifu Z. I'm going to try and not butcher his name, Marty Zinovich.
Not bad, Reggie.
I think I still butchered it, but...
that's okay. It's a tough one.
But yeah, no, I am so thankful to have you on here. I'm looking forward to hearing your story, and yeah, we're just going to talk some Kenpo and talk about your journey, and we're also going to pre-plug your book, so we'll make sure that we talk about that too. But yeah, I usually start things off with kind of my background. I'll just give the brief version, and that saying that I have advanced ranks in both Kenpo and Capoeira. And I also have some experience with Taekwondo and Hapkido, and I did some boxing as well. So that is the brief version of my story, and we may get into more as we go along, but so how did Kenpo find you? How did the martial arts find you? And where did it all start?
It started out in my younger days, my early teens, 11, 12, 13 years old. I was always interested in some type of martial art. I just didn't know what that meant at the time. You know, it was, we grew up in a pretty rough neighborhood, so we were very familiar with kicking and punching each other and knocking each other over the head with a stick or something. You know, that was our idea of fun, you know, but we never knew any different, so it was all good. I took a little bit of judo in my earlier days, and I liked it, but it just was not fulfilling what I needed to do. Then I went into wrestling in school, and I took a few karate classes. It was more to the Shotokan type style that I went and visited a few schools up in the Fresno area. And it was okay, but it was too far, and I didn't have a license, and getting my cousins or my family to drive me up there all the time. It was about a 35-minute drive. It just was not happening, you know, my schedule, my wants and needs, which I thought was the most important. They didn't, but that's okay. And then later, after I was doing the wrestling and a little bit still judo, there was a school that opened up next to my mom and dad's house, and it was a Kenpo karate school. And I had no idea what Kenpo karate was or anything else. They had a nice picture of somebody kicking on the window painted on there, and I thought that would look pretty cool to me. So I thought, all right, it drew me in, and I went in there and signed up.
Often does.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it was definitely a good hook. Come to find out, that was a Labowney lineage school, and it was Mr. Steve Labowney that his system was the National Chinese Kenpo Karate Association that was the banner over that school, and that's how my Kenpo career started, and I stayed with them until I got my black belt. And then I went down to Tucson because I was working in Arizona a little bit too. And I took a seminar with Mr. Parker. He had a form seminar that he did 1 through 6. And after I got through that day, I knew I had to have something else. There was a lot more. And there was nothing bad about what I had. It was really good. But, you know, when you sit there and you get a taste of the nectar, you know, it's hard to turn away. So I went back and I asked permission if I could go start training. I ended up studying, and I still am studying to this day, with Richard Huck Planus. And then I had probably about 11 years of being able to go to the Parker seminars and having them up to my tournaments when I sponsored them. And that was a great journey, you know, for my Kenpo portion of it. And I, like I say, I'm still doing it, and I'm still learning all the time and teaching it. And it's fun. It really is. It's a great experience.
Yeah. Very, very nice there. So was there a kind of a difficult transitioning period to go from, you know, the judo and the Shotokan to Kenpo, or did you kind of just fall right in and just jettison everything? And kind of conversely, were there things that maybe helped you with the Kenpo? So especially looking at kind of the Shotokan, or at least from what I know about Shotokan, you know, those really deep, hard stances and things like that. Did any of that kind of help with the transition to Kenpo?
As far as the transition part goes with the Shotokan, I didn't do enough Shotokan to really have it ingrained in me. And it was just all something new. I like the strong, deep stances and the hard, you know, portion of the Shotokan training. It was what little I had, it was pretty awesome. The judo, the wrestling helped me keep my center down a lot more. So the influence that we had in our Kenpo at the time, we had an influence from Kirk Ellis, and he was a great judo player up in our area. So we incorporated a lot of the throws at the end of the techniques from the judo. So it fit in perfectly. So it didn't really hamper anything I was thinking. It just gave me more of an application type scenario, how to apply it and how to, you know, get into that motion and that movement, you know, from there. And it seemed to enhance it. My biggest, toughest transition was when I went from the Labowney lineage and transferred over to the IKKA at Parker's, you know, and the moves were different. You know, it was more in the National Kenpo Karate Association. It was more of a Tracy type influence in that. We still had the Parker influence without a doubt, because Mr. Labowney and Mr. Kelly were, you know, on the fighting teams that they had. And it was a tremendous, you know, plus to have that thought process into our Kenpo that we were doing at the time. One of our first teachers, David Jimenez, he was the same way. And he had a lot of judo that he showed us and took us on the path, which was good. Then when I changed over to the Parker system, I mean, directly to it, it was a tough transition for me. That was probably the biggest, toughest changeover that I did. It was like having an old friend and you had to kind of let it go, and you didn't really want to let it go because you weren't real comfortable with the new and the new come on and let's try it this way. And it gave me its challenges. I went through a little bit of anger at the time, you know, wanting to know why I didn't get it right the first time. But after I settled down and learned, I wouldn't have been able to go from where I was at to where I wanted to go. It was just all part of the journey and the process. So it was humbling for me. I learned another avenue of humility, and it gave me a better understanding of growth and structure of what I had and what I wanted and where I wanted to go.
Gotcha. Yeah, I can totally relate. So I started at a school that was, you know, Chinese Kenpo, you know, essentially the Tracy's curriculum. And once I, you know, switched over to, you know, the Ed Parker's Kenpo, it was like, oh, well, you know, yeah, I know five swords. And it's like, well, no, you don't really know five swords. And, you know, so there were some things that I was able to carry over, and then some things not so much. The leg checks are definitely my kryptonite. As I do techniques, and it's like, oh, like where was that? Where's that leg check? Where was that check? I'm supposed to do that. So, I can definitely relate to the changeover and learning the terminology and all that. We didn't do that at my original school. So yeah, I can feel the pain. I feel the pain. So.
Yeah, it was always when we grew up, you know, quicker, meaner, harder, and And that seems like that was our model all the time. Right, wrong, or indifferent. It seemed to work, and it gave us, you know, I look back at it now, you know, would I have changed that training? Probably not. The whole ideal phase of it was, you know, to get a strong foundation. And I think I got that, you know, from, in fact, I know I got it from the Low Bounty group. That was so important. The Parker portion of it from Mr. Planus, it was very technical and very driven to that point. And I'm glad I have it now. The transition was tough, you know, because my mindset was always saying, hey, you know I can knock them out, but that wasn't the answer either. That was ego talking. And after I learned how to learn and slowed myself down and humbled myself and let a little crow hang out the mouth, you know, it really did make a difference in my training and my understanding of motion.
Gotcha. So in the early days of your training, what was the lessons like? What were kind of things that stood out in your mind or stand out in your mind about you know those early days of training? And
the early days of training were old school toughness. I mean, and when we fought, we generally did not have pads on our hands or our feet. They'd always call it Master Shinai, that lovely little bamboo sword, stick, whatever you want to call it. That was dear friends with us. I mean, we would look like a zebra by the time we finished class. It was grueling, hard training coming up through the ranks in those early days. And that was in the 70s, so it changed. And then, of course, as the 80s started coming in, then people started getting a little bit smarter and say, hey, you know, we got to work the next day and we don't need to go in all crippled up. So I think there's still a happy medium there. I really do. Do I think everybody can or do they want to go like we did in the old days? Probably not. Although there's some schools that do. You know, later on in my training, you know, I trained in the Filipino arts, and I studied with the Dog Brothers, and that was full contact stick fighting. That is real as you can get it. I mean, that one's a tough arena, and it reminded me back of the days, you know, under the NCKKA, the Levante Kelly era of toughness, because it was extremely tough.
Yeah, there's definitely been a shift in what people are kind of willing to go through these days. And, you know, like you said, there needs to be a happy medium. I know at my school, when it's like, okay, like it's going to be sparring day, it's like all of a sudden folks have excuses why they can't come to class that day. And it's like, okay, I think we're going to have to switch to pop quiz sparring days and not tell anybody. So just tell them to, you know, keep your gear in your car, because you know you never know when it's going to come up. But
we had gatherings up north, up in the Petaluma San Rafael area. That's where the head school was, and it'd be like a 3-day camp or a gathering, we'd call it. And Mr. Levante always tell us, he says, you know what? If you miss it, that's okay. But there's only one reason you're going to miss. You're going to be going to a funeral, your own. So that was the kind of training mindset that we had. You know, you just didn't miss. You were afraid to, you know, and I don't want to say in fear of your life, but you know, if you wanted to be in that world and get that credential, so to speak, you know, from that and that accomplishment, you went through the process. And it was eye-opening. I mean, I remember one time we were training. It was an upstairs building. And we were all filling our oats pretty good, but we're getting a little cocky. So I never forget, Mr. Levante grabbed everybody's belts off them. And I think I was a brown belt at the time. And he threw them out the window. He says, now get on the mat. And he says, nobody knows what's who's who. He says, I want to see the best 100% effort that you can give, and then give me a little bit more. But it just proved that the belt's not going to save you. It's you, and getting that mindset. So many times we'd see in a lot of tournaments, they'd have a lot of patches on their gis, and we were always required to wear a white gi with just the association logo. And he says, "Hey, will you use white because you're the artist and you're the one that has to paint the picture. Those patches are not going to help you paint it." So it was a lot of philosophy, like a lot of old school and hard, grueling, I don't want to say military type training, but it was more military type training than not. Like I say, I don't regret it. I don't know if that would be welcome, like we just stated a little bit ago, today in this world. There'll be a certain group that does it, but you're right. When it comes to sparring or comes to getting that grueling part, the crowd thins out. You have plenty of working room on the mat, a lot more than you want or should have.
Exactly. So what was kind of the differences in the kind of teaching styles between Mr. LeBounty and Mr. Planus? You know, how were their teachings different, or were they, you know, were they, did they teach kind of in a similar style, or just kind of?
As far as teaching culture, I guess, they both believed, because Planus was a student originally when they first started out in the late 60s, early 70s of Mr. LeBounty's, he and Tom Kelly both. So they, Planus and LeBounty, had that same mindset of getting the shinai out and cracking you across the arm or the leg or whatever part of your body needs to be straightened up. Pain was a definite constant, you know, between the two of them. As far as the moves go and the forms go, with the LeBounty lineage, we had, it was not as tight on the body motion, on the rules and principles of the motion. We didn't go into a lot of depth on that, as far as proper body mechanics. Although we knew how to hit hard, we knew how to move hard, and you know, we just, you had a free ticket to kind of ride your own wave, so to speak, on that, you know, without a lot of direction. And I'm comparing it to both. Now, Planus is considered the encyclopedia, you know, and that's you know, up for grabs. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of good guys out there, but he's the guy in my eyes, you know, that has really kept the reins and the boundaries on proper rules and principles of motion from the Kempo system. The differences that I saw, the toughness that we got from the LeBounty days in that group, second to none. They were tough, and you were either going to come to the calling or you wouldn't. It'd be like the bell they ring in the Navy SEALs. You know, you'd be over ringing the bell if it didn't make it, you know. So and there was no shame in it. Just the only shame was yourself having to live with it. In the Planus arena, he wanted everything to be just spot on as far as the mechanics goes, and have a thorough understanding of the system. So when you do teach it, you know, you can at least relay the proper rules and principles of that motion and that concept to the person that you're working with. And it didn't matter what level. He says you should be able to get that across. And he says, especially as you start learning it more, you should be on the phone and being able to talk a person through the motion. You know, there's no substitute for hands-on. As far as I'm concerned, you need the hands-on training of a qualified instructor. And a lot of times we don't get that enough.
Yeah, especially in today's world of Sifu YouTube. You know,
yes,
yeah, sir. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of people trying to get ahead of themselves, you know, putting the cart before the horse, sort of thing. So yeah, I agree with that. So yeah. So you mentioned you mentioned kind of the tournaments a little bit. Can you talk about, you know, your experiences with competing and kind of the tournament scene back then? And
the tournaments back then were, you know, hard and fast. I did compete in them and they were fun. I enjoyed it and I learned a lot from it. It was never my focal point for that. My grasp was to get the experience, you know, in the tournaments, to get the experience, you know, in the fighting and the forms, and the weaponry, just to make sure that I had an understanding of what was going on. Cause I feel like if you didn't do that, you were going to missing, you know, a big part of your training. A lot of times we forget that there's really four aspects to our art. You know, we've got the self-defense, we've got the forms, and we've got the free sparring, and then we have the sport karate. And a lot of it gets convoluted at times, you know, and this is just my opinion, you know, from what I've learned and sharing with you. I promoted a ton of tournaments up in the Fresno Reedley area, and they were late 70s, early 80s, and they were well attended. I mean, we'd have guys coming up there competing in that, and we generally have about 1,000 competitors, you know, at a pop. So there were big tournaments at that time. We'd have, you know, Mr. Parker would come up to it all the time, Mr. Labowney, Mr. Kelly, Mr. Jimenez, Mr. Halliburton. He was one of the foremost authorities in the Shotokan world up there, and we were close with him, and he's passed. In fact, a lot of them have passed, but he was a great inspiration also, and he was tough. He was one tough guy. You know, we'd have Eric Lee come up and, you know, do demos up there and join us, and it was a fun time. You know, we had a lot of the BKF guys come up. You know, it was a who's who in the tournament world that we had up there. You know, it was never as big as the internationals that Mr. Parker had, but it was a well-respected event that everybody wanted to attend and, you know, walk away with one of the prizes. So that was the fun part, you know? So yes, I did compete. Yes, I did throw tournaments. Yes, I did have a good working understanding. Was it my focal point and everything? No, I really wanted the education, but that was all part of the education too, to get a taste of that, to make sure, you know, that you didn't turn into being a paper tiger, so to speak.
Yeah. I can relate to that. And side note, Paper Tigers, great movie. Watch it if you have not seen it. I you know, went to a lot of tournaments. I only competed in a handful of them, and just in the sparring section. And if not every time, I think every time I got disqualified. So
I shared in that too.
that was always fun. And you know, I've toyed around with the idea of maybe getting back into it, at least to do the forms part of it. I never did the forms part of it in any kind of tournament. So I don't know. We'll see. It doesn't have the kind of interest to me now that it used to. But you know, I still kind of want to try it, just to at least say that I've done it, and then, you know, do one and just kind of leave it at that. But I don't know. We'll yeah. see. We'll see.
I think it's good. I think any type of experience you can get, you'll either learn what to do or what not to do, you know, and that's going to be your own pathway and your own self-expression that you're working on. And I think so many times, you know, we get caught up in that approval addiction mode, you know, that we have to have the approval from this person or that person or my teacher, you know, to really qualify how we feel about ourselves. And I learned that from training with Guru Dan Insano. It was more of a, hey, I'm a guide. I'm not your teacher that's going to tell you how to do everything. You're going to learn from self-discovery and exploration. You know, I'm just going to help guide you on that path to get you there a little bit quicker, you know, to get your own self-expression. And a lot of people will forget that at times. You know, we have the national anthem, and you and I talked about that earlier. You know, how many renditions of it are there? Are they bad? Or are they different? Yeah, they all are. And are they bad? No, it's just a different expression of that person's inner feeling. And I think that should be respected. And the same way with the art, there's so many different ways. I mean, we're sitting there and we say, hey, okay, you mentioned earlier, am I doing five swords? Well, you're doing a version of it, you know, and as long as you're following the rules and principles of motion, your body may not move like mine. And nobody is going to move the same way when we go through our techniques, period, end of story. You go to Baskin Robbins and, you know, you got 31 flavors there. You're not going to like what I like. You know, your record collection is going to be different than mine. We both like music. We both enjoy, you know, ice cream. But you know what? We have that luxury of picking and choosing what's going to fit our own personal desires and drive and the pathway that we're choosing. And like I say, our bodies are not going to move the same. I mean, you know, you're doing a lot of the capoeira. I've tried it. I've liked it. Like I told you before, you know, I'm not a fan of it. My body's not built for that, you know, so my hat's off to you on that. It's a very demanding art from what I've seen, what little I experience. And I like the beauty of it, and they can flow like water effectively. And I enjoyed what little I did, but like I say, I'm a babe in the woods on that art, but I do appreciate it.
Gotcha. Yeah. So let's get into kind of the teaching aspect. When did, the teaching part of it always something that you were interested in? And, you know, kind of when did that part of it start for you?
You know, that started out real early. And I don't know why, it just started out extremely early. I mean, when I was in my early color belts mode it opened up a lot of doors because it forced me to really get a better understanding of how to convey that message of emotion. You know, there's a lot of nonverbal communication going on. And if you didn't move right, people would pick that up immediately. If you brush your hair, you know, you're going to have somebody doing that thinking that's part of the move, you know, and it's not. Oh, I mean, it could be, I guess, if you're going to do a parry. But, you know, so my teaching started early. So it sparked me that I really wanted to get the education. And like I said, I'm talking my early Q days, you know, and it was always under supervision at that time. You know, I mean, of course, everybody thinks of a box of chocolates and all that, you know, and you get humbled a little bit too when you didn't come out right. And you want to be that authority, but you're not, you know, and you have to humble yourself to say, hey, I don't know. Let me find out. And there was a lot of that going on. And in fact, it's easier today. And I even see Guru Dan in Asano saying, hey, you know what? That's a good question. He says, let's think about it. He says, I learned a lot of stuff from you guys too. So that tells me a gentleman that's a legend in the martial arts at 88 years old is not afraid to say, hey, I'm learning something new. And he still takes lessons too, by the way. And I tell you, the guy's amazing. And there's a lot of other unsung heroes out there in our world that don't get the spotlight, that are deserving of it. And I acknowledge them. I really do. And I admire their drive to keep on going. And it's admirable. So, yeah. And like I say, with the teaching, it forced me to, in my mind, my desire, I don't know if it forced me or not, but my desire was to grasp onto every seminar, every class that I can get and take above and beyond, you know. And I know that's mixing and changing things, but it didn't hurt me at all. It really opened my eyes up to other structures. And, you know, I was lucky enough after my brown belt forward, you know, I got to take classes, you know, with Professor Wally J at the time, which was phenomenal.
Oh, very nice. Yeah,
unbelievable.
Yeah. Wally J was a mentor of my first instructor. And, we had to do some of the small circle jiu-jitsu and just great stuff.
Didn't want to point my finger at him after a couple of times. I thought, oh, no.
Yeah, no, I interviewed my original teacher, and I had to bring up a story of he was teaching a class, and he had, you know, kind of just started training with Wally J, and he's kind of showing us the small circle jiu-jitsu, and you know, we're kind of looking at this thing, and it's like, oh yeah, you know, you can just kind of take this finger and, you know, lead you around the room and all this thing. And, you know, we're all kind of thinking, oh, well, that's, you know, that's not going to work. Well, I got to be the dummy, for this. And, so, you know, I got up and my instructor was like, okay, well, you know, stick out your finger. And, you know, I stick my index finger out, and he grabs it. And then he's like, okay, like, now you're going to go down to the floor. And he like takes me down to the floor, and he's like, okay, now get back up. And he's still got my finger, and he like pulls me up, and I'm trying my hardest to get away from him. And, you know, my instructor's a pretty small guy he's a pretty small guy in general, but compared to me, he's really small. But yeah, he then proceeded to take me around the studio, still just only had a contact with this one finger. And yeah, just walked me around the studio and just, oh, get down, get up, get down, get up. And yeah, I was a believer right away. So yeah, anyone that doubts small circle jiu-jitsu, I can tell you it is very, very real. It works very, very well. So.
Oh, amen to that, brother. Yeah, I remember his wife coming up to me at the lunch break, and she says, "How are you doing?" I said, "Very well, I think." She goes, "You're very lucky." And and she was right. You sit there, and the next day my hair even hurt from being twisted in so many different positions. I mean, my body wasn't used to it. I mean, I was pretty flexible and stuff at the time, but that gentleman could put you in spots and turns and twists that, I mean, they were unbelievable. You know, it was a great experience. You know, I think a lot of the experiences that helped shape me were events like that. You know, with the Kanazawa sensei, you know, with Mr. Halliburton, he had me go down and I was doing a little bit of Tai Chi with a friend of mine from Malaysia at the time that was here. And it was amazing. Shotokan's hard, but that gentleman could do the push hand like nobody's business. I mean, it was just, and he was a smaller gentleman, but he had his body mechanics, knew the lever points extremely well, you know. And there's so many examples that I've been blessed with to have experience, and I'm not even in their league by any means. You know, the Sifu Francis Fongs with the Wing Chun, and his motion and understanding is phenomenal. You know, and Bill Wallace, I'll tell you a story about that one. We were in Florida, and I was teaching over there, and I forget when, probably in the early 2000s. And it was my teacher and myself, Bill Wallace was there, a few other guys. In fact, I think Mr. Tatum was there too, I believe. I think that was one of the times it was over at Sean Kelly's big camp that he had. And my instructor told Bill Wallace, use the kid. Of course, I was more of a kid by then. Yeah, I mean, that's way years back, probably in my 30s. And he says, okay. He says, I want you to come and hit me. I'm sitting there thinking, okay. And, you know, then you're still young enough, you know, unstoppable. Whap, throws that kick up to my face. Didn't hurt me, but I mean, it was fast. He said, okay, do it again. So I'm thinking, okay, I got to do something different, man. This guy is, he's super fit. Let's face it. Did it again. Then he said, okay, I want you this time. It's the third time now. He said, I want you to do something so different that you can do it. So I thought, man, if I jam him, I can just run him over. So I'm, you know, super strong at the time, but whap, he kicked me again. And I thought, oh man, that didn't go too good. He came up and he hugged me. He says, Marty, you okay? I said, yes, sir. He said, yeah. And he started laughing. He said, I bet you I really pissed you off, huh? He had a sense of humor that was second to none. But I'll tell you what, he said, that's why they call him Superfoot. Doesn't have two of them, but the one he has, it's fast. But when I saw it, it is super fast.
Yeah, he is. That was he's amazing. He really is amazing. I took a seminar with him a few months ago, and I'm honored to be a part of the elite club of people that have been I was kicked, punched, and choked by him during the seminar. So I wear that badge quite proudly. But I mean, yeah, he's up there in age, but still full side splits, no problem. Still whipping those kicks out like nobody's business. So he's really, really amazing. So
yeah, it's when you get a chance to train with some of the pioneers. I think, and I really promote everybody to do that, you know, just take the lesson. You can't learn from enough people. I mean, you know, you may not really resonate with that one person's teaching, but then again, they may have just one little concept that sticks with you and changes your whole art. And I think that's so phenomenally good to have those experiences. And I really push on people to definitely get out there and train with other people. You know, and plus from the teacher telling that, I think it's a good check and balance that, you know, you really are humbling yourself to say, hey, you know what, there's a lot out there to learn. And, you know, we don't have that much time in our lives to really accumulate that much. Mm-hmm. Although yeah. It's a lot, but it's not enough.
Yeah. You know, you can't, you know, just to look at one style, you can't learn everything in, you know, 20 lifetimes. So you're, you know, at least in my opinion, yeah, you're cheating yourself if you're not going out there and seeking all that you can. And, you know, not just in Kenpo, but other systems. And you can learn something from everybody. They don't have to be the 10th degree. You know, it could be somebody in their trial week, and they may teach you something that you didn't know that you needed. So, you know, like they say, you don't know what you don't know. So, out there and get everything you can. So I like that. I do want you to go ahead and talk a little bit about training with Dan and Santo, and then we'll get into your book. But yeah, I'm always I'm surprised I have not gotten enough stories about Mr. Inosanto yet. So when did you get involved with him, and kind of how's training with him came about, and talk a little bit about that.
I'll start with the Filipino training that I had, and that my early introduction to that came from Richard Huck Planus, my Kenpo teacher, believe it or not. And I got a taste of it, and it was advanced for me at the time because it seemed like it was advanced because I didn't know anything about it. And I liked it, and then I started training probably mid-80s with his brother, Ed Planus, and he studied the Kabawan system, which was under Mr. Romero Estalila. And I did that, you know, up to the 90s, and then I asked Huck Planus, Mr. Planus, you know, my Kenpo teacher, I said, you know, I really want to go study with Dan Inosanto. I said, can I do that? And he gave me his blessing to do it. So in 99, I started my journey up at the Inosanto Academy, and it was in Marina Del Rey. And the school I started at was on Manchester Avenue, and that was the older school. And I went in, and at that level, at that time, you had to study with one of his instructors before you even got to take a class with Guru Dan. So I did that, and I got my instructorship about 5 years later. And I dedicated myself a ton of study time with that, and it was an easy choice. You know, I got divorced, and it was either go off the deep end or immerse myself in the arts, and I immersed myself in the arts, thank God. And I was putting in a lot of hours, privates, training, studying with the Dog Brothers, Mark Danny at the time also, and that went on for about 5 years until I got my instructorship under the Inosanto Academy. Then I was allowed to change over and start studying directly with Guru Dan. You know, because when you got people in there, the place is packed. I mean, when you go on a mat scenario, I mean, it's 30, 40, 50 people on the mat. I mean, it's just, and if you have an instructor's camp, I mean, it's even packed even more. His methodology of teaching is to teach you about life and teach you about yourself also as you learn. And it was a different way to learn. A lot of people say he teaches really fast. He does teach really fast. There's no doubt about it. The first few times I'm on the mat with him, I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, geez, I can't keep up with this guy. You know, you can do this, you can do this, you can do that, you can do this. And you got 7-8 different options. And your head, if you got one or two of them down, you thought you're doing pretty good, you know, at the beginning. And I already had several years of experience doing that. But I felt like a babe in the woods, you know, when I first started training with him. The different arts that I was setting at the time, you know, I was doing the Dog Brothers, I was doing the Salat, and I was doing the Filipino martial arts and the JKD. So, you know, you're taking different classes for each one. And it was educational, to say the least. As I continued on my training, it became easier to follow on him. Guru Dan's mind moves so far ahead of where you're at. I mean, he's already 7, 8, 9, 10 steps ahead of you when you're going. And it was just amazing. As far as the man himself, he's so humble and caring. It's unbelievable. He's a gentle giant in the art, and he's a genius. He reminds me of a lot of the Ed Parker type magic, you know, that goes on with the development of that. He's just amazing. You know, as far as studies go, you know, I'm still there to date. In fact, I was down there this week. I'm going again tonight to train, but I'm there every week. And it's amazing. It's like you're starting all over again with him. He gives you a new way and a new set of eyes to look at some of the old. He never lets the old become old. He gives it a new zest every time. And he's got that ability to get you thinking, get you looking at it different. The verbiage will come out a little bit different. So you kind of scratch your head on what really is he saying, you know, so it doesn't throw you sideways, because what he's doing, we're a product of 37 different styles at the Anisato Academy. And what he's trying, I believe what he's trying to, this is my interpretation of it and a lot of others that tell me the same, is that he wants you to have an understanding of the other arts, and not everyone's going to fit you perfectly. You're going to be able to do something in one that you can't do in the other, or you may like it a lot better and it fits your personality better, you know, as you do move forward. I think that's in a nutshell of Guru Dan. I mean, he's so well versed. The guy's just a wealth of knowledge. I mean, he really is. It's amazing. He wants us to learn, and he brings in a lot of different instructors in there for us to get experiences from, and it's countless. I mean, it really is. The nuances that come through there from a different instructor's perspective, and the growth. I mean, with the Balintnawak system, that's a single sick type system. We've had instruction from Attilio, Nene Gabakayan, Bobby Tabuada. You know, I studied with Nene for several years, and it's just phenomenal. Every one of those teachers has a different flavor, and they're all good. They're all extremely good. They're above the best, I guess, where you could classify them. And they give you a different nuance of where you want to be. With the Nene, he's so deceptive in his motion and fast and hard. And then you have Bobby Tabuada. He's strong and hard, and he's got more of a little boxing flavor to it. So, you know, his personality comes out a little bit different in the arts. And like Guru Dan said, he says, you know, each one of his teachers says, you know, theirs was the best. And he says his analogy was that they're all the best and they all have something good to offer. And he'd always tell us, you know, he says, learn. He says, keep your mouth shut. And he says, don't criticize. Take the information, and he says, some will fit you, some won't, you know, and I think that's probably one of the greater, you know, statements he has. And he's always stating, you know, he says things evolve all the time. You know, it's not going to stay the same. You know, when the records came out, you had the vinyl 33s, then it went to an 8-track, then it went to cassette, CDs. Now it's in the you know, in the cloud. And he says everybody's record collection is going to be different. And he said that the methodology of, it's still music, it's just getting carried forward a little differently now in a different, you know, aspect of it. And I think if there's a good lesson there for our Kempo too, you know, it's, you know, we all say, hey, it's got to be like this. Here's the way Five Swords should be. Well, not really. If you're following the rules and principles of motion, your body can only move correctly, you know, so many ways. That's a given. I agree with that. Now, your expression and my expression of Five Swords is going to be a little different. I mean, it's going to look similar. We'll recognize it, but you're going to have a little different twist on it. Why you like it a little bit different or a little bit better than I do, or vice versa, you know? So there's no really a wrong way of looking at it other than the mechanics should be done correctly and the application, you know, and there's a lot in that too, you know, when it comes to saying that, you know, so many times we end up in a memorized, you know, portion of our arts instead of living the art for what it's really intended to be. It's a warrior's art. It really is. And you can't go out there and get in a fight by any means, you know, but if you do need to, you know, like they say, you know, train good, because under a pressure situation, you will drop to the level of your training. So, you know, cut it short, you're going to get cut short, you know? So that's a little bit of the Inosano flavor. And I don't know if I could do it justice by sharing that little bit, because he is such a phenomenal teacher and just a great person to be around. He's such a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, I really love talking to people, and when they're mentioning someone like that, how I love how kind of everyone cooperates. You know, what they say about a person, and you really get that sense of like, okay, yeah, this guy is definitely this way, because everyone is saying, you know, all the things that I've ever heard about Dan Asanta, you know, mirror what you said. So I get a warm feeling going, okay, yeah, he's definitely that way, and, you know, not just everyone's, you know, fanboy and fangirling about about him.
No, that's right.
It's like, no,
that's
he right. Really is that person. So I really like that.
Yeah, it's, and like I say, he's got a great sense of humor too. You know, it's I'll share one story with you. It was about, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. We're on the mat and we were training. I think it was a Salat class. And I've got a 13-year-old son, so he was 7-8 years old at the time, or whatever it was. He was young. And I ordered him pizza because, you know, he sat outside, you know, and the studio, and they're big wide open doors. That it's a warehouse type, you know, environment. And all of a sudden, you know, this guy walks in, there's two doors coming onto the mat. One's from the office and the other's in front. We usually leave it open because it gets hot in there. There's so many people. And all of a sudden I see this big crowd gathering around Guru Dan, and they got somebody else in there, and I hear my name being called, Marty. I'm thinking, oh, geez, man, we've got a problem coming in here or what? Then all of a sudden they opened up their bodies around him. There's a guy with his shoes on. It's a Fresh Brothers pizza delivery boy for my kid. And I was kind of shocked. I was embarrassed a little bit too, you know, at the same time. And Guru Dan goes, he says, you know, Marty, I am hungry too, but I really could have gone for some Thai food, you know, and he knows how to play it off and not make you feel bad. And of course, that's been the story. One of the stories down, I mean, God, there's a bunch of stories we can go into, but that was one of the stories that sticks with everybody. And the other day, in fact, 2 weeks ago on a Monday, and I was training, my son ordered El Pollo Loco, and all of a sudden they come in the front door, and the lady in front, she goes, hey, Marty, I'm sitting there, class is going on. El Pollo Loco here for you. I said, for me, that's got to be my kid. And I didn't know he ordered it, but I think it keeps following me around. But yeah, there's some crazy stories down there.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay, so let's talk about your book. I'm excited to hear about it, and I got to make sure I get myself a copy. But yeah.
Yeah, it's called The Edge of Reality: Evolution, and what I wanted to do is and it's a blade oriented book about knives, and I didn't want to make a how to book of, you know, go out and defend yourself or carry a knife. You know, it's not to promote that. It's to give you a little history of how the blade started. It's to give you more of an education and a knife awareness scenario of your legal, your responsibilities. It does talk about some of the self-defense concepts that should be done. And I incorporated a lot of the Inosano type teachings that I've had, you know, within the book too. And I put some pictures in there of the old days of, you know, the Lavani lineage and, you know, a lot of the planets as we grew through the arts. I felt it real important to give people at least plant a seed on being aware and respectful of the blade. There's so many times that we see self-defense for a blade or for a stick or for a gun taught by empty hand teachers that really have had very little experience, you know, in teaching that, you know, and I'm not putting them down by any means. That's not the purpose of this. But my statement is this: I think that getting education from a properly qualified instructor is paramount to what you do in the weapons type portion of it. And even with Mr. Planis, you know, and I want to give his works on it. When I asked him about a couple of the sets that we have in our Kempo system, and he said, and I asked him about the weaponry, he says, if you want to study weapons, study a Filipino-based martial arts, you know, curriculum. He says, you'll get a better understanding. And he was right. I mean, from my perspective, and I've been doing the Filipino arts along with my Kempo for years now. I've been at the Academy for, you know, right at 25 years. And prior to that, you know, another, you know, shy side of 15 years doing the Filipino arts, you know, with the Planises and adding it to my Kempo. And what I did see a lot of in there is when you take that, when you start working with a stick, and you'll start seeing your lines a lot cleaner. Even when you're doing it and you put it into a Kempo type move, you'll see how you should be flowing at times to understand the lines. I'm not saying to do that all the time, but it just gives you a better understanding of tracking, you know, what you're doing. As far as the blade goes, I didn't get into the stick in that book at all. That'll be a future, you know, writing. But this one, I wanted to give everybody just enough understanding to see and respect that knife. Because once it comes out of the sheath, there is no off button. And if it's ready to go, something's going to happen. And generally when it does happen, you know, it's going to be within a 3-foot range. And it's going to come in stealth. And a 3-foot range is about the length of your arm. So, you know, it's going to happen so quick, you won't know it. And that was the purpose of doing the book, to give everybody just kind of an awareness, you know, of the blade.
Yeah, I like it. I've been starting to get a little bit more into the you know, the knife stuff a little bit. I'm always scared about things like that, but you know, being in some seminars and doing a little bit of that. I've definitely been more interested in it and looking into getting into some of the FMA stuff and just because it's a lot of fun. But yeah, I definitely want to get a better understanding of that as well. So I'll definitely be getting a copy of the book and checking that out. So, I'm excited for that, and thank you for making that happen. And I can't wait to get into it. So now let's move on to the lightning round of our time today. So I got a few little questions to throw at you. First one being, do you have a favorite technique?
You know, I've been asked that several times. I think all, not all of them, but a lot of the techniques are fun to play with. I had a favorite, I don't want to say five stars because that's a cop-out every time you do that. I do like flashing mace, not the full version of it, but the shortcut version of it. And I like to incorporate some salat into that, you know, for the takedown on that. So that would be probably one of my more favorite type techniques.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like it. I like it. Right. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
My favorite, like form four a lot. And that's the meat and potatoes of our system. And for me, I like the way it feels, you know, for my body when I do it. Six is flowery. Okay with that. Five, it teaches you good balance points and takedowns in there. Threes are, you know, what they are, you know, elbow sets, grabs, you know, but four seems like it really resonates with me well.
Very nice. I like it. All right. I think I know the answer to this one, but, what is your, or do you have a favorite, weapon?
yeah, I do. I do like the blade a lot. I've got a huge respect for it. I do like the stick also, the single stick. I enjoy that a lot. Double stick, I do, and have fun with it too, but I like the single stick just for the flow of it. And then probably my next weapon of choice would be the sarong. It would be like a flexible type weapon that's pretty versatile. I mean, you can use your belt. You can use anything you want from that. Probably, I don't know if in that order or not, but those are my three favorites.
Very nice. I like it. Right. The final question, if there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, besides Ed Parker, who would that be?
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Reggie.
Yeah, well, you know, when I started with that question, you know, this being a Kempo show, you know, Ed Parker came up a lot, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to have to start, taking that off the table. So,
yeah, you definitely put a roadblock up there for me. You know, I think I like the Bruce Lee type thought process that went on. He was way ahead of his time as far as mixed martial arts. And the only reason I know a lot of it, I'm just living it through the stories from Guru Dan and Asano. I think he was be one of the greats to study with. In fact, I got several of them. You know, I would have enjoyed more Professor Wally J's stuff. The other guy that always kind of interested me is Master Moses Powell. He was so graceful. I mean, that guy was unbelievable. I never had the experience of doing anything there. And then, believe it or not, Professor Chow. I think I'd like to jump back in that little arena. But there's so many greats out there, you know, that you took me to a candy store, you know, you put a roadblock in front of the obvious. But I think I would have really enjoyed doing that with those guys a lot more. And then going back, you know, it's real good friends of mine are you know, like Adam Yukitis, Smiley Yukitis, and Benny Yukitis. At that time frame, you know, Bill Riyazaki's name comes up a lot with them, and then their brother Arnold, which I've met, and he's a great guy. I like some of their philosophies, and their work ethics are just second to none. But those would be a few just off the top of my head.
No, I like it. Those are great names indeed. So, yeah, I I'm all aboard with that answer. So it's great. All right, so now is time for the shameless self-promotion. So you can plug anything you want. You know, of course, your book, but anything else that you want to put out there, you have the floor to say whatever you like, and then we will close out for the day.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you very much for having me on the show. It's much appreciated, and I've enjoyed the times that we have spent, which are, you know, it's new times for us both. And I like your drive. I like what you're representing. And I really feel good about seeing that. You know, we don't have enough of it. And of course, the book, Amazon.com, grab one. It's a good one for the holidays, everybody. My wish for everyone is to keep studying, keep exploring. There's so many layers to that onion that need to be peeled back to really get a full understanding of your art, and never be satisfied. Never be satisfied at all of where you're at. And like I was always told, and I believe it more and more and more, and this is Guru Dan saying again, every 5 years you should reinvent yourself, because your body's not going to move the same as it did prior. And you're going to have new likes, new dislikes, new abilities, new changes. And we always want to focus on what we did before, or we were this, we were that. No, it's a new day and time. You know, we have to look at, you know, what good can I do now? And how can I help somebody be a little bit better than they were yesterday, today? You know, and those are my main plugs and main thoughts, you know, and I wish everybody the best on their martial arts journey, and to keep exploring, and try not to take too big a break if a person wants to take a spot off in between. You know, we all, you know, want to give a good reason for doing that. But, you know, if you did something every day, just a little bit, maybe it's not fully what you want to do, but that little bit you can do, it will make a difference. It'll accumulate. It really will. And it's for your own good. And it's that life cycle of, you don't want to take that sudden drop. You want to take a nice, easy decline into your senior years. I don't want to say older years, the mature years, but those are my thoughts and hopes for everybody, and wishing them the best, and happy holidays for everyone also.
All right. Very, very well said. Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with that. So, I thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. We'll definitely have to do this again and get into more of the stories and kind of more of your journey. But yeah, once again, just thank you so much for being on, and I'm excited to get this out to the people, I will be in touch when this is ready to go out, and we will just keep things moving along. So thank you.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for having me on, Reggie. I really appreciate and enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.